The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. We had another Celtic Throne performance last night, by the way. So as per usual, we've got some very positive feedback to play for you at the very end of today's show, so you can look forward to that. It was a smaller crowd last night, but like the second performance in Rapid City, it was a boisterous crowd, I should say. Lots of enthusiasm in the crowd last night, and the performers, given the fact that a lot of them had a two-day road trip coming back from the feast, and a few have been struggling with a cold and sore throat, that sort of thing. So you wouldn't know it, though, looking at the performance last night. Another great show, and then the final show in this run. That will be this Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you live in the Oklahoma City area, don't forget to get your tickets for the final performance here of Celtic Throne on Sunday. Well, coming up later on in the show, I'm going to return to the subject of Abraham Lincoln. He's been on my mind of late, as you know, from recent trumpet briefs and from a couple of programs earlier this week. But particularly when you look at some of the things that we'll discuss in the first segment here, it really is refreshing to look into his life, Abraham Lincoln's life, and to see what went into it, the training, the education, the preparation. God's hand was obviously involved, as I've covered, but just to see his love for the truth and for law, he really revered law. He worked for 23 years as a lawyer, and today you see so many corrupt lawyers. You see lawyers who are trying to get around the law, who are casting the truth to the ground, as the Bible says. But Abraham Lincoln was certainly not like that. He was a man who upheld the law, who revered the law, who looked to the law for answers. And that's what made him such a great lawyer and eventually, of course, the greatest or one of the greatest presidents in United States history. Well, speaking of presidents, we're right in the midst of an election season, less than 3 weeks away, 19 days away. From November 3rd, last night, you had these dueling town halls, as they said on some of the commentary. President Trump at NBC, I think Joe Biden was over at ABC, and of course the last night was supposed to be a debate between the two, but the president pulled out of that after the debate commission said it would be a virtual debate. He said, no, I don't want any part of that. If you're going to try to provide cover for your favored candidate, then I'll just go to my rallies and such. So they had the town hall set up for Joe Biden. And then I think when NBC came along and said, well, we're going to have one, too, with President Trump, there were a lot of people on the left very upset by that. Because they know, of course, that Donald Trump gets much bigger ratings than Joe Biden. In any event, you had both of these town halls going on last night. And before that, President Trump had a rally in North Carolina. And yeah, I'll leave it to you to look at some of the news, I guess, to see what each candidate had to say. I did think it was kind of funny after Savannah Guthrie was the one debating President Trump. It really wasn't a town hall. It was a debate between President Trump and Savannah Guthrie for about the first 45 minutes of the hour. And then one of the individuals in the town hall got up and said that she thought President Trump had a beautiful smile. And that just kind of set everyone at ease. Everyone, there were quite a few people that actually clapped. And the president looked like he was just a little bit taken aback by someone that would actually say something complimentary, even if just in praising his look. So that was a funnier, I guess, lighter moment. In any event, over at ABC, you know about all the stories that broke this week. The New York Post, and how that story, or those stories, plural, they have been smothered by a left-wing media that's doing everything it can to protect Joe Biden, to suppress the truth. They are in full damage control mode this week. In any event, you have all of these stories about this corruption, this pay for play, millions of dollars coming into the hands of the Biden family, Hunter Biden and others, Joe Biden's brother, his sister-in-law. You have all of that breaking this week at the New York Post. And I believe Joe Biden's town hall went for 90 minutes. George Stephanopoulos was the moderator. Not one question from Stephanopoulos or from anyone in the audience about these scandalous allegations. Here's what it says at Breitbart. ABC News' George Stephanopoulos failed to ask former Vice President Joe Biden at a town hall Thursday about new email evidence that his son, Hunter Biden, arranged a meeting with him for an advisor to the corrupt Ukrainian energy company Burisma in 2015. It says, as Breitbart News noted Wednesday, the New York Post reported on emails it had obtained from an abandoned laptop in which Hunter Biden's correspondence with a senior Burisma official was preserved. So here are all of these explosive bombshell allegations based upon information retained or that's contained on this laptop that was abandoned at this shop in Delaware. So you have big media that's done everything that they can to smother the story, so much so that it didn't even come up last night. The day after this explosive story made headlines, it's just been blotted out. As far as big media is concerned, it's been blotted out. And then, of course, you have big tech. You have all the social media sites that have literally blotted it out. They've censored it. They, as I covered yesterday, they will not allow the story to circulate. They just won't allow it. And, of course, this has quite a few of the president's supporters in Congress up in arms. This is what Senator Ted Cruz had to say yesterday about big tech censoring the New York Post articles. Clip one.
We have seen big tech. We've seen Twitter and Facebook actively interfering in this election in a way that has no precedent in the history of our country. Yesterday, the New York Post broke a story alleging serious corruption of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden concerning Ukraine. The allegations in the New York Post story, if true, indicate that Vice President Biden lied when he said he had never discussed his son's business dealings. That story, once the New York Post broke it, was blocked by Twitter and Facebook. Anyone who attempted to share it was prevented from sharing it on Twitter or Facebook. The New York Post itself, when it attempted to put out its story, was blocked on Twitter and Facebook. The New York Post has the fourth largest circulation of any newspaper in this country. Never before have we seen active censorship of a major press publication with serious allegations of corruption of one of the two candidates for president.
Never before have we seen something like this. Active censorship in the United States of America. Now, the left, they're there saying that, well, this was just a tabloid, the New York Post. But as Cruz points out there, this is a tabloid with the fourth highest circulation in the United States. And yet Twitter, Facebook, they just blot it out. Ben Shapiro tweeted, "What we're watching, the militarization of social media on behalf of Democrats and the overt suppression of material damaging to Democrats to the cheering of the press. You'll hear that in just a moment from a CBS report. They're cheering it on. He says it's one of the single most dangerous political moments I've ever seen. Censorship in the land of free speech. Listen to the rest of Ted Cruz's statement from yesterday, clip two.
This morning, the story escalated and got even worse. The New York Post broke a second story of a series of emails that indicate yet more corruption. In this instance, the Biden family receiving millions of dollars from communist China government officials. Just minutes ago, I tried to share that story on Twitter. And Twitter is actively blocking right now, this instant, stories from the New York Post alleging corruption and the Biden family receiving millions of dollars from communist China. This is election interference, and we are 19 days out from an election. It has no precedent in the history of democracy.
You see, the media, they were so concerned about election interference in 2016, so much so that they came up, they were out there actively promoting Russian disinformation in the form of the Steele dossier. They accepted that as truth, top to bottom, and they were actively disseminating it. Here is a case where you have a trail of evidence and you have wire transfers, millions of dollars, coming into the Biden family from communist China. And the media just brush it aside. Newt Gingrich, he tweeted yesterday, lost in all the censorship is that the Biden campaign isn't disputing the basic facts. The Post uncovered about Hunter Biden's cashing in on his dad's high office. They were cashing in, and much of this was known, but now you have these damning emails. And no one, it seems, no one from the Democrat media complex is interested enough to at least ask Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, the Biden family, well, what about these emails? What about this laptop? No, instead you have the media out front, social media right there with them. And they're now working to establish a narrative that would justify all these actions. And yet, amid all of this, there's no disputing the basic facts. Listen to this Biden campaign spokesperson responding to someone questioning him about these explosive allegations. Clip three.
Well, look, I think Twitter's response to the actual article itself makes clear that these, purported allegations are false and they're not true. And glad to see, social media companies like Twitter taking responsibility to limit misinformation.
So why are the allegations false? Because of the way Twitter responded. Because Twitter won't let the story circulate. Because of that. Because of Jack Dorsey, the Twitter CEO, a radical left-winger. Because he's blotting it out. Well, then it must be false. It must be false. Listen to this. This is from a CBS report. You wonder why there's no coverage of it. Well, there was a little bit of coverage on CBS last night. But notice what goes missing from this segment. They bring in this guy and he says, well, there's disinformation here. And then, well, Rudy Giuliani, he's part of the story and he's had associates in Russia before. Move ahead, if you would, Dwight, to clip six.
Experts say it has all the hallmarks of information laundering and all the headaches of 2016.
I have nothing to say about WikiLeaks.
Back then, it was Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta whose emails were stolen and then dribbled out in the last month of the race. This time, it's a tabloid newspaper dribbling out emails, purportedly swiped from Vice President Joe Biden's son.
This is a big smoking gun.
The go-between this time isn't WikiLeaks, but Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani, who says he got the emails from a computer repairman in Delaware.
He wanted us to have this. He also thought it displayed numerous crimes. So he gave them to my lawyer. We have the entire hard drive.
Giuliani has admitted before to working with a known Russian agent to dig up dirt on the Bidens.
This looks like your classic disinformation campaign.
Eric O'Neill is a former FBI operative.
Steal the information with a cyber attack, get the emails from Hunter Biden's account, and then put them on these laptops that are left at a repair store. And that's how the information is now laundered into the public.
Who do you think is behind this?
Well, the Russians would be my number one guess, if I had to guess.
So the Russians, here come the Russians again. The Russians are behind it. The emails were stolen and then planted on the laptop in this computer repair shop. And then somehow Rudy Giuliani got it from, well, he's had Russian sources before. And so then they trot out this former FBI operative who says, yeah, this has, it has all the classic hallmarks of Russian disinformation. And not once do you see Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, they're missing from this report. Why not? You have 90 minutes with him last night. Why not ask him, is the laptop your son's? Are these your emails? Did your son email this? Did the advisor to the board of Burisma, did he send that email to your son, Hunter? And what about what you said? That you had no knowledge of any of your son's business dealings. In fact, you met with board members of Burisma. You, Joe Biden. There's pictures. There's emails. Instead, you get people coming out with all of this speculation. The truth is cast to the ground. Never mind the truth. Never mind what actually happened. Never mind the money transfers. None of that. You have a former FBI operative coming out and saying, yeah, I think this is probably Russian disinformation. And it's very similar to what happened in 2016. It's the same kind of reasoning from 4 years ago. And it's all based on not truth and facts and law, but on lies, on narratives created by the media. 90 minutes at a town hall, not one question. Not even one question. Not even hinting at it. It's as if it didn't happen. It's as if the New York Post doesn't exist. Well, if it does, it's just a tabloid, keep in mind. It's just a tabloid. You see what we're dealing with. You see in that CBS report how the game is played. Okay, this is bad. These stories, they look pretty bad. So what do we need to do? Well, let's go out and get the people that we need to establish a narrative. And then I guess Joe Biden and his campaign can take it and run with it. This is the media coaching him, coaching his advisors. Then you have the spokesperson saying, well, I mean, it's obviously false. Twitter banned it. And then there they are cheering on Twitter. You had that in the same CBS report. Listen to clip 7 here.
This time, social media outlets were quick to limit the spread of the story. Twitter briefly suspending the accounts of the Trump campaign and White House press secretary after they tried to share it.
They're excited about this. This time, Twitter, social media. Well, they squashed this story in a hurry. Good for them. Good for them, says CBS. And what about the facts? What about the truth? What about what happened? President Trump, as I said, he was at a rally in North Carolina yesterday, and he's out there telling some truth, telling his supporters what has happened, and it's gone on for decades. this kind of corruption. And of course, you can argue over what is technically legal or illegal according to U.S. code, U.S. law. Getting perks on the side, is that, it's in a gray area, I suppose. But this kind of corruption, let's call it what it is, it's gone on for decades. And there, like I said yesterday, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people involved. There's a lot of people on the take. Whether it's with China, Russia, Ukraine, wherever. Here is the president yesterday in North Carolina, clip 4.
Joe Biden is a corrupt politician, and he has been corrupt for many years, and everybody in Washington knew it. And just now, a little while ago, a news story shows up that Hunter made a deal with a wealthy Chinese business magnate for $10 million a year for introductions only. Introductions. Hunter also referred to another more lasting and lucrative arrangement with the same Chinese businessman that would be so much more interesting to me and my family. That's what he said. That's a quote. These deals were made at the same time Joe Biden was letting China steal your jobs and take away your factories. If Biden is elected, the United States will be owned by China.
This is a line that's... Well, it's at every speech he gives now. If Biden's elected, the U.S. is going to be owned by China. They've been bought and paid for. So many millions, $10 million a year. $83,000 a month from Burisma. $3.5 million transfer from the wife of the Moscow mayor straight to Hunter Biden. And yet you get the FBI operative saying this has all the classic hallmarks of a Russian disinformation campaign. And then the media there covering it up. And big tech blotting it out. Here's one more clip from yesterday, the rally in North Carolina, clip 5.
Now, big tech, you see what's going on with big tech? Is censoring these stories to try and get Biden out of this impossible jam. He's in a big jam. You know, his son left his laptop at some place. Fixed my laptop. He forgot to pick it up. The guy from the laptop, it looks like he saw it. He said, wow, this is really criminal stuff. He brought it to the FBI. Can you believe this? Yeah, they have stuff coming out you won't even believe. Yeah, you'll believe it. He and his family are crooked, and they were caught. They got caught. Now they're being protected by big tech. And if big tech persists in coordination with the mainstream media, we must immediately strip them of their Section 230 protection. Okay, it's very simple.
They've been protected to this point, as the president points out. Facebook, Twitter, well, we're just platforms. You know, we don't have an agenda. We can't be held responsible for this or that. They can't be sued for libel or whatever. And the president there is suggesting that unless there are some changes, that protection is going to be removed. And that's what I think Ted Cruz was getting at, too, with his statement yesterday. And so they've called in Jack Dorsey. I guess that's next week. And it remains to be seen, I suppose, whether they get to the heart of the matter and actually bring about some change. I suspect that they won't. There's probably going to be a lot of grandstanding and so on. People are more inclined to just make their big, you know, soundbite statement that catches some attention in the media, but then that's it. The truth, as the Bible says, there's no faithfulness in our mouths. That's in Psalm 5 and verse 9. And of course, Isaiah 59 is what talks about the truth failing. Brent Noctegal sent me this article that my father wrote back in 2004. And that seems like such a long time ago with respect to politics. And, I mean, this is before the Jeroboam end. It's before the Antiochus administration. 2004, and my father was writing about the deadly left-wing media. The deadly. It's deadly. It's dangerous. It's destroying our country. He said in that article, the left-wing media's goal is to change our people's thinking. They are not trustworthy journalists. They want to rule, not inform. They are tyrants and terrorists of the intellect. I mean, that's a strong statement. And reading that in 2004, well, I mean, as a trumpet reader back then, I'm sure I was there thinking, wow, that's powerful. That's true. But a first-time reader might have thought, wow, that seems a little bit too extreme. It wasn't. It isn't. 90 minutes at a town hall and not even one question, not even one simple question. Was the laptop your son's? Are those emails from him? Was his account hacked? Are the Russians responsible for this? None of that. No questions. And then CBS, poof, creates a story, creates a narrative. Nothing with Hunter Biden, nothing with Joe Biden, nothing with any Biden. Well, this has just happened before. This is classic Donald Trump, Russian collusion, Russian disinformation. My father says the left-wing media scorn history. Here again, note how applicable this is to our time today, where we are right now. They scorn history. That's why they never seem to learn lessons from history. Even recent history, like events leading up to World War II and the Iraq War. They worship the false god of their own human reasoning. It says that means they give us very little context in their reporting. They give us their biased opinion and often fail to give us the whole story. They're lost in their own warped human reasoning. They're a danger, even to themselves. They are also a grave danger to the many people who trust them. See, people just go along. Many people believe them. Well, you would say half the nation, half the country does. Now, the president, for his part, he's there pointing at the media platform at every single rally, saying they're fake, they're lying, they're not telling the truth. So to some degree, he is exposing this. But they continue on. They continue on. Look at the way the media have behaved this week. With the New York Post story, with anyone that tried to link to it and tweet it out. And then you have the town hall and no questions, nothing. It says media, this is my father writing 16 years ago. He says media conglomerates are extremely powerful. They are becoming too powerful for politicians to challenge. To directly challenge the mega media often leads to political death. The media frequently have more power with the people than the politicians do. They have more power than the politicians. Now, he's writing this in 2004. I believe that was a few years before Facebook and Twitter even started. This was before social media, or certainly before social media became dominant in the world of news, narratives. It says here, the left-wing media are in a power struggle to get control, and they are winning. They are becoming more powerful than the government, even though they were not elected by the people. Not elected. See, some similarities here with what we've seen in the administrative state, the deep state. None of these individuals are elected. They've been in those positions for decades. And as I said earlier, many of them are on the take. They're being paid off. Their pockets are being lined by those who are seeking favors from people in high, powerful positions. China, Russia, Ukraine. Look at the evidence. Look at the wire transfers. Look at the emails. Instead, what do we get? A former FBI operative. Yeah, I think those emails were probably stolen and then just put, they were planted on a laptop in that Delaware shop. And then it somehow got to Rudy Giuliani and he has Russian connections. So here we are again, Russian disinformation. That's a CBS report just last night. This article that my father wrote in 2004, he talks some about the BBC, and I'm not familiar with the, this is from an incident 14 years ago, how the BBC reported on a story. It was basically making the point that, well, okay, some of the facts are off, but, you know, the gist of it, the gist of it is true. I mean, this was the BBC. And this is from a Telegraph article that my father quoted from. The difference between the two claims is the difference between truth and falsehood. So what is the truth? Shouldn't that be the aim here? Did you send the email or not? Why did you say this? Why, after you were hired by the board, did they then email you right away with an urgent matter requesting you, requesting your influence, needing your influence to solve this matter? We're being attacked. We're being investigated. We need help. And the Biden family, boy, they did provide help for Burisma. Did they ever? So he says the difference between truth and falsehood, it's a difference with colossal consequences. Journalists who are unable to recognize it cannot be relied upon to tell the truth and should not be working for the world's greatest and most trustworthy source of news. That was the Telegraph's take on the BBC back in 2004. Now, you know some of the history with BBC and other outlets, even in the lead up to World War II and what Winston Churchill was confronting on a daily basis, the spirit of appeasement and the willingness of these great distinguished editors to just tell blatant, bald-faced lies. They did it then. They're doing it today. My father says it is indeed the difference between truth and falsehood, and a difference with colossal consequences. And then listen to these concluding points that my father makes. He said, falsehood enslaves us. It takes us into a black world of deceit. It is a less violent slavery than what terrorists fight for, but it is still slavery. It's the slavery of the mind, the intellect. It's still slavery. It says we become enslaved to error, evil, and fantasy, and call it truth and freedom. We just pretend it's true. No matter the facts, no matter the truth, it's a web of lies. And then we say, well, this must be the truth then. Well, if the facts aren't all there, certainly the gist of it's right. I mean, there really can't be any corruption in the Biden family. The corruption's over there with the Trumps. He says this issue gets to the core of whether or not we really love truth and freedom. Anything less than the truth is just another form of slavery and terrorism. My father says, finally, the self-willed, arrogant, left-wing media are trying to enslave us. They're trying to enslave us. He says it's just another form of terrorism. Terrorism back in the early 2000s, that was the big story, obviously, following 9/11. But then here comes my father with this Trumpet article in 2004 on the deadly left-wing media. He says, finally, whether it comes from the right or left, it's still repugnant. The more we see such hatred of the truth, the more we ought to see just how precious truth is. How precious it is to have the truth of God, to have His revealed word, the Holy Bible, and following on that, to have the literature that God's church produces, to have the Trumpet magazine, to have the Key of David, to have KPCG, to have truth. It's not to say that we never make a mistake. We certainly do. But it's the truth. It's the truth that we seek after. It's the truth, as Jesus said, that sets us free. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can submit comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I forget the name of the author, but he wrote this book called Lawyer Lincoln, and he explained in the opening pages of his book that after Lincoln's assassination in 1865, that there was this rush to produce articles and even books about Abraham Lincoln because so many people felt like they didn't really, besides his presidency during the Civil War years, they didn't really know him. They didn't know a lot about him. He kind of came out of nowhere there in the late 1850s. And then all of a sudden, he's president of the United States during the time of America's greatest crisis. And then he's dead. And then he's assassinated. He's assassinated for upholding the truth, for upholding the Constitution. He's assassinated for preserving the Union, basically. Well, before he became president, Lincoln spent 23 years as an attorney, a lawyer. For 23 years, he spent most of his time in law offices, in courts, in judicial circuits. And this is where you could say that he received his training, the training that he would rely upon as president of the United States, as someone who would swear to defend and uphold the U.S. Constitution. He became a lawyer, an attorney, by studying not just Blackstone's commentaries on English law, but he studied the Bible. He studied the Constitution. He studied the Declaration of Independence. And when you look at the way he tried his cases, he argued based on principle, based on law. And he wasn't as I guess, influenced as much by precedent. You hear a lot of discussion on that today, particularly when you have a confirmation hearing like with Amy Coney Barrett that wrapped up yesterday, I guess. And there, everyone wants to know, well, are you going to rule like this this case from back in 1973, or are you going to rule according to this case in 1995? Well, let's go back to the Constitution itself, the supreme law. What about that? This is what Lincoln said as a young lawyer, his position on law and upholding law. It says, "Let me not be understood as saying there are no bad laws, or that grievances may not arise for the redress of which no legal provision have been made. I mean to say no such thing, but I do mean to say that although bad laws, if they exist, should be repealed as soon as possible, still, while they continue in force, for the sake of the example, they should be religiously observed." Now, he said that when he was 27 years of age. Think about that kind of wisdom coming from a lawyer, an attorney today, or a politician today, and 27 years of age. The courtroom, as I say, that's where Lincoln was able to practice and argue from the law. He didn't try to get around the law. He tried to apply the law, to use the law, to submit to the law. And through it all, as I say, 23 years of experience, he came to understand the law more deeply. That trumpet brief that I wrote a couple weeks ago on the Lyceum address, well, I just gave you the quote, something he said when he was 27. I think the Lyceum address, that was a speech he gave when he was 28. And he made some of the same points as the quote I just gave to you, that look, there are bad laws. He wanted to eliminate slavery and the protection that the Constitution provided for those southern states, to contain it at least. And so there was a way to go about changing the law, amending the law, so that slavery could be eradicated. But in the 1830s, this was, you know, long before the Civil War period, he's giving that Lyceum address. And at that time in the United States, there was a lot of mob violence over the throughout the nation, a lot of race hatred, a lot of violent clashes between people, between radicals from both sides. Those that were pro-slavery, those that were against slavery. And Lincoln steps right into the midst of this debate and gives this profound speech, again, as a 28-year-old, a young attorney, a young lawyer. And he said, we in America find ourselves in the peaceful possession of the fairest portion of the earth as regards extent of territory, fertility of soil, and salubrity of climate. We find ourselves under the government of a system of political institutions conducing more essentially to the ends of civil and religious liberty than any of which the history of former times tells us. I mean, in other words, we're fabulously blessed. He talked about us having the fairest portion of the earth. And my father said recently that it's hard to think he didn't have some kind of an understanding of prophecies in Genesis. The blessings of Abraham, the other Abraham, the Abraham of Genesis, and the promises that God made to him. You can read some of that in Genesis 35. But then as I said earlier this week, my father's made the comment that Lincoln was like a prophet of God. He was like a prophet of God. There was another book I was just skimming through a section recently by Henry Steele Commager, I think it was. We've quoted from him before. He's had some pretty good statements about Churchill and such, but he was a left-winger in his day and wrote lots of books, and he was saying about the Civil War period, he was praising the United States, which, you know, in one sense, it's refreshing to read that. I think the book was from 1990, so this is long before the cancel culture. But he was writing about the Civil War period and saying that, you know, a lot of Americans were educated. They read the newspapers, and that for the most part, we were a moral people. And I just jotted down in the margin that well, Abraham Lincoln certainly didn't think that way or sound that way when he was calling upon national repentance. He said the Civil War, we brought this on ourselves because of our sins. And that's why my father says he was like a prophet of God. He was like a prophet of God. There he was as a 28-year-old talking about the fairest portion of the earth, just basically handed to us as a gift, just landing in our laps. Well, you can see why my father said what he said about Lincoln and why Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, had so much to say about Lincoln and his writings, even in the United States and Britain in Prophecy. There's some lengthy passages in there where Mr. Armstrong says, well, hey, let's let Abraham Lincoln answer. How did we come into possession of all this vast wealth of the earth. Did we acquire it through our own human wisdom, foresight, energy, ability, and power? That's in the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. And then Mr. Armstrong says, let Abraham Lincoln answer. Here's Lincoln's answer. And then he goes on to quote what Lincoln said in that Lyceum address. We find ourselves in the peaceful possession of the fairest portion of the earth in regards fertility of soil, extent of territory, and salubrity of climate. We toiled not in the acquirement or the establishment of them. We didn't do this. We didn't make this. Now, that's essentially the United States and Britain in Prophecy. In a nutshell, that quote from Abraham Lincoln. The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy obviously does not take God out of the story. It inserts God right into the heart of it. And the thing of it is, Lincoln did the same thing. During the 1860s, he brought God right into the middle and said, look, we've sinned and we better repent or else we're in trouble. In the U.S. and Britain, it says, Abraham Lincoln knew these great material blessings had not been earned, but had been given to our people by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Lincoln acknowledged in that Lyceum address that, you know, we have all these blessings. It seems like we're impervious to foreign attack. We've got these barriers between us and enemies. But where we're most vulnerable is on the inside. The die by suicide, as he said in that Lyceum address. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time, or, it says, die by suicide. That's a chilling warning that Mr. Lincoln gave to the United States back even decades before the Civil War. Lincoln said, I hope I'm not over wary, but if I am not, there is even now something of ill omen amongst us. I mean the increasing disregard for law which pervades the country. See, that's what it should boil down to. With any news report, with any courtroom argument, with any political address, what does the law say? What is lawful? What is truthful? And what is falsehood and lies? Lincoln was trained. He's giving this speech when he's in his late 20s, in the early part of his career as a lawyer. And here he is weighing in on these acts of violence in the streets of America, or on the streets of America. He talked about mob law and how that if that continued, the government of the United States would not last. He said this, finally, let every man remember that to violate the law is to trample on the blood of his father and to tear the character of his own and his children's liberty. Let reverence for the laws be breathed by every American mother to the lisping babe that prattles on her lap. Let it be taught in schools, in seminaries, and in colleges. Let it be written in primers, spelling books, and almanacs. Let it be preached from the pulpit, proclaimed in legislative halls, and enforced in courts of justice. That's what Abraham Lincoln, young Abraham Lincoln, thought about law, the supreme law of the land. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some feedback from Celtic Throne, the latest performance. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is marriage on the way out? Is the institution of the home, with its family life, to disappear from society? How and when did the institution of marriage originate? Does it, after all, serve any necessary purpose? Why marriage? Soon obsolete? takes an in-depth look at the institutions of marriage, the home and family life, and reveals a startling, even shocking truth, which has been altogether overlooked by science, by religion, by education, and by society. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
I thought it was great. I saw Lord of the Dance years ago, and it was as good as that, I would say that. It was great. We really enjoyed it. The kids did, too.
It was really fun. Like, I really felt the beat, and it was very enjoyable. I probably really liked the part, the Gale. That was really fun.
It was really crazy and exciting and very fun.
It was really good.
I liked it.
I think it's great. I don't dance anymore, but I think it's so cool to see everyone dancing because I love dance. And so it's really cool to see it because I haven't watched it in so long. So, yeah, it's really cool. Everyone's really good.
I love it. I love the music. I love all the culture that it makes me think about, and it's exciting. It's a very exciting dance.
I love teaching little kids, and so it makes me just love. I just love watching how excited they get on the stage. So it's really fun.
So and those children were so fun to watch. Yeah, yes. So we
had never heard of these people before, and I got an email from the Armstrong Auditorium, and I saw Celtic Throne and some pictures, and I was like, we're going to this. And we have been very happy. Yeah, it's very, they're so tight, they're so precise, they're so good.
Fans of Celtic Thunder and that whole thing, this is just right up there with it. So we're happy to be here.
And I love the dresses. Yes.
Yeah, let's say the rendition of the final glass, the parting glass, was really awesome.
They're so good.
I really want to go on stage. I like the when they with the green dresses.
It was good. Kept her attention, so it was good. She's practicing now to dance.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I absolutely loved the dancing and the sound effects. The sounds hit you from all angles, so I thought it was really intense, and it just brought the audience right into the show. Absolutely love the Parting Glass song. Probably one of my all-time favorite, I guess, male quartet pieces. But, I thought it was great. Everything, the lights, dancing, all the choreography. You could tell they practiced a lot, and it's paid off, so...
So far, we enjoy it. We drove an hour and a half to be here. We've actually waited about a year to be able to catch a performance like this. And so far, it's not disappointed. And grateful to get to be here with my wife. It's a beautiful show. I'm looking forward to the second half. So my wife and I both were literally just talking. I don't know if that's why she asked me this. She was just asking me if I would have noticed what she noticed about the show. So we both have an appreciation for the arts, dance, singing, acting, things of that nature, instrumentation. I had actually wanted to bring her up here about a year ago, and then we had our third child. So we waited, and then we're like, why not during COVID to come now?
Yeah.
It's been years since I've been here to the Armstrong, but I've actually been here for another performance with my mother, and I've been wanting to bring my wife here, so I keep up with things through the email. So whenever I saw this, I was hoping she would say yes, and she did. So here we are.
Actually, I'm from China, so I watched the dancing, this type of dancing on the TV before, yeah. But this is the first time I actually in person saw them. I think they perform like a really traditional Irish dancing. Yeah. They dance very rhythmic.
It's absolutely beautiful to see them carrying on the tradition of their culture. And they're very, very talented.
My favorite part is just, like, I love seeing how fast their feet move. And they are so in sync. It's, like, that's amazing. I love it.
Well, when your last name is O'Neill, you might think I like this Celtic stuff. And you'd be right.